On tonight's show, it's the end of the football season. I'm a little sad, Thomas.
I'm sad too.
Well, guess what? I'm going to cheer you right up because we've got end of the year awards.
You get a trophy. You get a trophy. You get a trophy.
Everyone gets a trophy.
Well, they're not actually trophies, but the point is, it's the end of the season, so we're also going to be wrapping that up and showing you what else is going on right now in the world of Sun Belt sports.
And we've got coaching changes. A lot of guys making moves from Group of Five to Power Five. We're going to have it all.
The carousel has begun.
Roll it. On the show tonight, we've got...
Every night was a battle.
You can lock this in, take it to the bank.
No class at all. It's unbelievable.
They should see a relatively quick turnaround.
Show me the money.
Big water slide, snow cone truck and everything.
One team stands alone.
Well, you know, what I think about Troy.
I'm losing my mind over here.
We've got the moment you've all been waiting for.
Of course.
Welcome into another exciting episode of the Bench Boys Podcast. I'm Colin Cahill.
I'm Thomas Gleaton.
And boy, we are trying, y'all. Tonight, that intro was just...
I can't tell you how many times it took us to get through that.
Man, we're trying. It's the end of the season. We're trying to find that, you know, that last ditch, you know, effort, basically.
It's hard because I love football and I love this season, and it's now leaving us behind.
It is. We don't want it to go. So, but we've got a lot to talk about on the show. But first, while you're here, hit the subscribe button. We're on social media as well. Twitter, Facebook, MySpace. Yeah, we've got that Justin Timberlake. He's been talking to us lately. But we're on everything. We're literally on everything. So we're glad you're here. And man, we've got an exciting show tonight.
First of all, we're giving out our awards. We've got so many changes to talk about.
We do.
It's just it's a beautiful time right now in the Sun Belt. There's so much going on. Let's just go ahead and get out the gate.
We're just painting brush strokes. You
know, is that Bob Ross? What you're doing?
You make a little tree.
Are you doing a Bob Ross thing, bud?
You do a little.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. It's a beautiful time.
Out of the gate.
Yeah, so you and me pretty much kicked butt this week.
Oh, yeah.
5-1. The only game we missed was the MAC championship.
Darn you, Miami.
I will forever not be a MAC fan. Not even because of that. They call themselves the Hustle Belt. I'm like, you guys don't hustle.
No.
You went like 0-8 in bowls over the last like 3 years, so you don't hustle.
Like, they're hustling to the sideline to get a glass of water.
Pretty
like,
much. Yeah, I'm not afraid to say it. Miami of Ohio played Central Michigan. My reasoning for Central Michigan winning that game was that they had an offense. They only scored 21 points.
Yeah. I don't remember what mine was. I think I just picked the better of the two teams on paper, and that's what happened.
I guess Iowa is better than Wisconsin because... Iowa beat Miami of Ohio, and Wisconsin beat Central Michigan. So both of those two teams. So whichever team came out on that was obviously the better team. So that means that Iowa played the better of the two teams.
Did Iowa beat Wisconsin this year?
We don't talk about that. No.
The transitive property doesn't work, my dude.
Head-to-head doesn't mean a thing.
No. Okay. It's all about quality losses.
Quality losses, that's how Big Ten fans really like delve into things.
Speaking of quality
Unless
losses,
you're Ohio State.
The Sun Belt, what a comeback from Louisiana that didn't turn out to be anything.
That game was you were like, okay, App's got this.
Yeah.
21-0.
Literally turned it off at halftime.
App's just going to roll. I mean, they did roll. Don't get me wrong. They did roll. They were up. I mean, they were killing them. I mean, they scored 35 points in the first half and only gave up 17.
Yeah.
That's it right there. But, you know, Louisiana, credit them. Credit Billy Napier. Did not give up. I mean, let me tell you the stats here of one team, one side team. 354 yards passing, 85 yards rushing, 118 yards receiving. That was their leading passer, rusher, and receiver.
For App State?
Nope. UL.
Louisiana only had 85 yards rushing and one person?
For one person. Team stats, Louisiana, 513 yards of total offense. 354 in the air, only 159 on the ground. The 159 is where that should tell you the whole part of the game. Because this is a Louisiana team that averaged like 260 yards a game in rushing, and they were 100 yards below that. That should tell you everything about this game. Like, App State punched them in the mouth. I mean, Louisiana, they had 38 rushing attempts for only 4 yards a carry. When you can hold Louisiana to under 5 yards at carry, you're doing something right in that
they
game.
They held Louisiana under 175 yards.
Yeah, total.
And it's a team that should be getting 200 every game.
The more shocking part is the fact that they threw for almost 360 yards.
Yeah, all this year, this entire year, I remember saying, oh, I like Louisiana because they can actually throw it. Yeah. I like Louisiana because they've actually got the throwing ability. And they never did until they absolutely had to against App State in the championship game.
They had 31 first downs. Louisiana had 31 first downs. It's really hard to lose a game when you have 31 first downs, but your defense just, I mean, it was kind of asleep the entire first quarter. I mean, you can't spot a team as good as App State with a defense like what they have, 21 points before you ever even wake up. Like, you just can't do that. I mean, they had three turnovers. No,
even if you try as hard as you did,
yeah,
it clearly still doesn't work.
I think Troy did that last year.
Yeah.
Against them. They spotted them 21 points. And I think the game ended up being like, what, 28-14?
It was like 24-10. Yeah. Something like that.
It was, you can't spot a team that good with that good of a defense, 21 points to begin with. But I mean, 31 first downs, they were 8-14 on third down. Those are really good statistics right there. That's what you want to see. That's a formula for winning ball games. It's just the fact that you can't spot them 21 to start the game. So 45-38 app. You know, obviously, now we know where they're going bowling. A lot of people at that time, when everyone saw, even me, when I was following, and I saw 21-0, I said, whoa, like, this is what they need to do. Like, to put some sort of thought into all those bowl guys' minds. Because they were the first game up. Like, you didn't have the Mountain West hadn't played yet, and who was it? What did
American.
American had already played, didn't they?
No, American was in the middle of playing.
They were in the middle of playing as well. Okay, yeah. So you were still battling. You still had that chance. So, and when they go up 21-0, you're thinking, oh, man, they're going to run this thing. And that's a good start. And then, obviously, 45-38. It's still a great win for App. I mean, 12-1 season, historic season. They're first team in North Carolina, in the state of North Carolina, to win 12 games in a season. Nobody else has ever done that. App State did it. First Sun Belt team to ever win 12 games. There you go. App State, incredible season. Incredible run. Zach Thomas, incredible run. Just workmanlike. He didn't blow you away. He had 150 yards passing. That's all he had.
Wow.
That's all he had.
I'm shook.
I mean, they only ran for 267 yards.
Well, but see, only 267?
Only, okay, I say only, like, that's not a lot. Harrington? Yeah. Harrington?
Darrington?
Darrington. It says D. Harrington on here. On the ESPN app, which is vastly, vastly wrong. Apparently, 9 carries for 89 yards and a touchdown. Long, 25. Williams Jr., 8 carries, 78 yards. And who is D. Harrington?
I guess I seem to
is
remember.
Is he the guy who got hurt early? Yeah, that's Daytrick Harrington. Okay, so we're puzzled here. But Daytrick, his first game back was actually against Troy. And he got hurt early in the year, and he came back from an injury. That's who he is. So it isn't a mess up. Darrington Evans had 19 carries for 73 yards, and then you had Mr. Williams Jr. who ran for 89 yards. So Marcus Williams. Not blow you away stats, but still a team that just kind of. They were in control of the game the entire time, like even in the fourth quarter. I still felt like even when Louisiana was making that comeback and was making it interesting, I still feel like App State had control of the game.
Eventually they did. Inevitably they did.
Yeah. So that's the Sun Belt.
We had Memphis winning a close one over Cincinnati. That's what really drove the stake home and kept App State out of it. I think the only chance that App State had, if they were going to try to get to a New Year's Six game, they would have had to have Cincinnati win by a very, very, very close margin, maybe like overtime or something.
I think, to be honest with you, I think Cincy should have, they would have needed Cincy to blow them out. That's what they would
have
needed.
Well, no, because Cincinnati was ranked ahead of them.
Memphis had, was
both of them were ranked ahead of App State.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe if a blowout might help them, just because it might have said, Memphis isn't that good.
No, because they would have seen Cincinnati going in.
Yeah.
And then they would have needed Boise to lose, which did not absolutely happen.
Boise took care of business out in the Mountain West. 31-10 win for Boise State over the slinging Rainbow Warriors of Hawaii. Cole McDonald, he might have thrown for 5 interceptions. I don't even know. The kid just throws the ball everywhere. That was my prediction, that he was going to throw a lot of passes, and a lot of them were probably going to get picked off, but he'd still throw a lot of passes. Boise State, another workmanlike, another championship. Boise State, I think they're staying out west. But obviously Memphis gets the primetime NY6 bowl slot in the Cotton Bowl. They're going to be taking on Penn State with Memphis without their coach. We're going to get into that a little bit later here. But, yeah.
And speaking of coaches, Florida Atlantic.
Florida Atlantic and COSA.
Smothering
my
UAB.
God. Like, you talk about Lane Kiffin going out on a, like, train. That's basically what he did. He trained right through UAB. A lot of people were – I mean, credit to UAB. UAB was picked to finish, I think, like, 4th in their – division this year, just because of all the people they lost. And credit them. I mean, they go out and they won 9 games. Granted, very close games. And you get to your second ever conference title game. Last year they won the dang thing. And then this year you get back to the conference title. That's a heck of a year for Bill Clark. I mean, Bill and the fact that Bill Clark, you and me were both talking about it last week, whoever's coach is still here is going to win this ball game. Both the coaches were still there for the ball game. But Bill Clark, credit him for the, like, I wouldn't say a rebuild, but, like, just keeping it going. I mean, we've seen how hard it is to win 9 to 10 games a year, and he lost, like, 30 guys off of that team last year, and they're all seniors, and he was able to still get this team to go win 9 games. I mean, that's still something very, very proud. If you're a UAB fan, you better be proud. I mean, you didn't have a football program like, what, 3 years ago? So
I said it a lot that it's difficult no matter what conference you're in. Even if you're in the CUSA, it's difficult to get 10 wins out of a season, regardless of who you're playing or what level you're playing at.
I mean, most of the time, if you're a G5 team, you're going to have a P5 game on your schedule. And 90% of the time, you're probably going to lose that game. I mean, that's just how it is.
App State won both of them, and that's an exception to the rule.
Huge exception to the rule. So I mean, if it's hard to win 10 games as a G5 school, it just is, and that's why Boise State is just so impressive of the run that they've done over the last 15 years, because it just seems like they crank out 20 years. So it just seems like they crank out 10 win seasons like it's nothing. I mean, it's and they're playing Power 5 schools. So, but yeah, this game FAU. I mean, this is what FAU. We were talking about. Louisiana having 31 first downs. FAU, 29 first downs. FAU won by 43 points. Louisiana lost by 7, or whatever it was. 45-38, 7 points. FAU had 585 yards of total offense, 300 yards passing, 290 yards rushing. Like, those are stats. Like, with the exception of the rushing part, That's literally an equation.
Those are Madden stats.
That's a winning formula. So, but no, Lane Train had the train rolling against UAB, 49-6, huge win. FAU, I think they're playing in the Cherubundi Boca Raton Bowl, pretty much in their
home backyard.
Field. So, but then FAU had some news later on that day. But yeah, we went 5-1. We still have one game left to go with. We talked about it last week. One of the best rivalry games in the country, with Army Navy this week. Sweet, sweet uniforms. Army debuted theirs today. I think
Army's got out a few days ago.
A few days ago. Okay. Yeah. So Army, both of them are pretty much out, and both of them are probably gonna look. I haven't seen Navy's yet of this recording.
Yeah, they're great.
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, I figured they're always amazing.
The thing is, they're going with a very clean, classic look, and I love it
because they're the home team this year.
Yeah. But the helmet is this weird kind of supposed to look like it's hammered metal kind of deal.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of it, but the rest of the uniform looks great.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to emulate the whole Roger Staubach years.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
But the point is.
Yeah, so we still have Army-Navy this week. I love this weekend. It's the only game on. The pageantry, the lead-up I talked about last week, it's just Saturday is a fun day to watch this game. I mean, that it's the only thing on. It's appropriate that these two teams, these two schools, these two institutions are the only thing on TV. Like, it's going to be fun. They play for the Commanders-in-Chief Trophy this year as well. So a lot of stuff is going to be going on through that game. We previewed it last week. We were going to do something kind of cool with the Heisman thing this week, but decided not to do that. So plenty of Heisman winners out of both of those institutions as well. So so that will do it for our championship recap. Now it's the end of the year, and it's time to hand out some awards. And who better to basically sponsor and present these awards than Mr. Ben on Sports? Yes, that's right. It's the Ben on Sports Year of... Or, excuse me, End of the year
awards.
I totally messed that up.
Like, it's right there on the banner.
It's like reading a prompter.
We have confetti.
Totally messed up.
I brought out the...
Oh, yeah, there is a banner.
Yeah.
Okay.
Come on.
So, End of the Year awards brought to you by Ben on Sports. I'm going to get into it. Player of the Year. I think this was pretty much the most...
The only one that we were really unanimous on, and I think that it's deserved just because of how immense this season was.
Oh, yeah.
Omar Bayless.
Omar Bayless, congratulations. You are the Bench Boys, Ben on Sports Player of the Year right there.
Yeah.
Incredible year. Sun Belt records with receiving yards, almost 1,500, 1,473. Sun Belt record with 16 touchdowns in the season. And then in Arkansas State, in their record books, he finished third. They were school records as well, both of those. He finished third in the school on the school sheets, I guess, or the school record books, with 84 receptions. So, hell of a season. He just got invited to play in the NFL PA Bowl. So him and Mr. Kirk Merritt. Kirk Merritt had a heck of a year too. Kirk Merritt was like, if Omar isn't there, Kirk Merritt is got all of these records.
And that's literally what happened in the South Alabama game.
Yeah,
they shut down Omar Bayless, who had 100 yards receiving.
Here's Mr. Kirk.
There it is.
Captain Kirk, they probably call him.
Probably.
They probably call him. Set your phasers to stunning. Come on, man. Kirk.
Stunning season. Yeah, I know. I get it. Star Trek.
God, he like looked at me like, what are you doing, man? Like, yeah, you're not a Trekkie? Come on. Are you a Star Wars geek?
I'm a Star Wars geek.
See, I like Star Wars too, but I've also watched Star Trek.
I've seen Star Trek too. I was just... You said sent phasers to stunning, and I'm like, for what? He had a stunning year.
Stunning year.
Okay.
That works.
All right.
There you go.
Well,
yeah, that's exactly what I was playing.
Let's keep going because we got other players who have stunning years as well. Let's go ahead and work our way down and start with the offensive players of the year. Do you want to go first?
Take it for a ride.
So, apart from Omar, I think the player who made the biggest impact on the offensive side of the ball this entire year in the conference was Darrington Evans at App State. That's my pick. He was third in rushing, first in scoring, not just scoring touchdowns, but first in scoring across the board. That includes kickers, and he was second in all-purpose yardage. Darrington Evans is just absolutely, in my opinion, apart from Omar, the best player in the conference, bar none.
I think on a national level, he is the poor man's Travis Etienne.
Yeah, I agree.
He reminds me of, he is a home run threat.
Yep.
And he's kind of built like Travis Etienne, who, if you guys don't know who I'm talking about, he's the running back for Clemson. Those two remind me so much of, if he gets past your front seven, he's gone. Like, I mean, he just hits a hole and he's gone. I mean, it's incredible to watch him play. That's who he really reminds me of, is of Travis Etienne, and that kid's going to be in the NFL.
We saw Rashad Penny from San Diego State. Mm-hmm. He made the transition to the pro level eventually.
You just had to bring up Rashad Penny.
I did, but I'm going to compare them because I can see Darrington Evans having a similar career path and just being a sleeper hit for whatever team picks him up.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think he'd be a really good third down back, like, because I think in the NFL he's going to have to adjust to be able to, like, go out and catch passes. Mm-hmm. And if he's got that speed, which he does, and he's got decent size. Like, he's not a smaller back by any means. So I really think, he has a good future in the NFL.
Who have you got?
My offensive player of the year, I was going simply off of, not necessarily, I mean, you said impact, and obviously Darrington Evans played on a 12-1 team. My guy didn't play on a – they didn't make a bowl. They went 5-7 on the year. A field goal away from basically getting to a bowl game. Caleb Evans.
Okay, I was about to say. You said Caleb Evans. I was about to say, no, it's not who you think it is.
It isn't who you thought it was.
Because that could have very well easily been Caleb Barker.
It could have been Caleb Barker. I mean, no, it's the other Caleb, if you want to say that. Caleb Evans for UL Monroe. I mean, the kid, he's had an incredible career at UL Monroe. I should have done more research onto where he's finished career-wise on the stats. But so far, I'm just focused on this season. 2,900 yards passing, 800 yards rushing. As a quarterback, 33 touchdowns total. He had 21 passing and 12 rushing. I mean, there's not a whole lot of guys. If he gets 100 yards more on pass, I mean, 3,000, 1,000, that's a hell of a goal as a quarterback.
I'm not going to spoil it, but we're going to get to a player in a little bit on that you picked that has some similar numbers rushing to that. And he's you're talking about the quarterback.
Yeah, this is a quarterback that's doing this. I mean, his impact, I mean, if ULM doesn't have Caleb Evans at quarterback, they probably win two games this year. But I mean, that kid, just the amount of, I guess, eyeballs that are on him, like, while he's playing. I mean, he makes defensive coordinators pretty much lose sleep at night because of just what he can do with the when the ball's in his hand. I remember last year, Vic Koenig had nightmares about him in that game. I mean, Troy jumped out to like a 28-0 lead, and Evans
nearly won it.
They
himself.
Nearly came back, and it was him. I mean, he just extends plays. He makes plays happen. I mean, he just didn't have a whole lot to help him out this year. But that's why I think 2,900 yards passing and 800 yards rushing. That's an incredible year. That's 3,700 yards. I think him. Caleb Barker and Zach Thomas, total yards wise, I think all of them were like literally neck and neck at the end of the year. And Caleb Barker had Zach Thomas had an extra game to play. He had 13 games, while these two only had 12.
So it doesn't quite. It's not quite the same.
Yeah. So, he's definitely my offensive player of the year, Caleb Evans, senior. So this is his final year. You hope he gets into a postseason bowl like Omar Bayless.
It'd be fun to see. I'm going to let you go ahead and take the next one as well. Go ahead and start off with your defensive player of the year.
Defensive player of the year. I think this was a travesty that was not named. So, like, Sunbelt didn't name him defensive player of the year.
I'm a little bit of, it's a little bit of a homer for us to say that. But
it is, but
also, prove us wrong. Prove me
I'm
wrong.
I'm about to prove everybody wrong. I mean, Carlton Marshall, yes, he played on Troy's defense, which wasn't great.
Yeah.
But this kid was a stud. I mean, you talk about he led the Sunbelt in tackles. Tackles for loss and forced fumbles at the middle linebacker position. That is what you're supposed to do at that position. You are supposed to be a tackling machine. Brian London was a close second in tackles. Like, I mean, that kid led Texas State in tackles. The other thing is he finished sixth in interceptions. He had four interceptions and 15th in sacks with four sacks. So, I mean, he was all over the place. And for he's only a sophomore. Only a sophomore, which is downright scary. But when you go and you look at a player like him, he's like 5'8", maybe 5'9". They give him an inch or two on the broadcast. But for this guy, I mean, he's a tackling machine. He's probably one of the best cover linebackers in the Sun Belt. I'm talking about from sideline to sideline, he beats everybody he hits all of the angles. That's what he does. And so for him, in my opinion, I think it was a travesty. Nothing against William Bradley King, because I think he was the one who got it.
Nope,
who
was Akeem Davis Gaither.
Oh, excuse me, Akeem Davis Gaither from App State. Another hell of a linebacker. But I just think when you lead tackles for loss and forced fumbles, that should qualify for, that should win it. I really think the reason why they didn't give it to him is because he wasn't on an unbelievable defense like what App State was. App State's defense was an unbelievable defense. So I think that helped. I really think that
it's kind of the same case study as Caleb Evans versus Zach Thomas.
Yeah,
is that or Caleb Evans versus Darren Evans?
I mean,
yeah,
I don't think that should affect if you win the award. Like it is a singular performance and how you did over the year, and I think that's all it should be.
And I have to agree with you on that because I'm going to go with basically the guy who's going to be next in line. I think. On that list of defensive players, and William Bradley King in Arkansas State. I'm not going to go with Byron London. He's very close in my book, but I'm going to go with William Bradley King because of the superlatives. They're very similar to Carlton Marshall. He's tied with Carlton Marshall in first for first in forced fumbles. He's number two in sacks in the conference. He's number four in tackles for loss in the conference. William Bradley King is that next guy, and we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. He's the next guy in that line of Arkansas State defensive linemen who are absolutely terrifying to offensive linemen.
I mean, freaks on the DN.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're just he stood up on that line just as big as any other guy before him on that Arkansas State line. Yeah. Let's go to the third phase of the game in special teams. We got a little bit of fun, going back and forth on this one. I'm going to go with Trey Minter because he leads the conference in all-purpose yards. I told you Darrington Evans was number two. Trey Minter is number one in all-purpose yards, and he's not very high on the rush list. Now, obviously, we talk about you're going to have players who are on really big, really good teams that are amplified by the success of those teams. Well, Trey Minter is in a vacuum, and it's sort of the opposite. He has a ton of return yards because his team was in the in the position for him to return the ball a lot. It's not very good for South's offense, but he made a difference on their offense and in the special teams for them. Mm. So Trey Minter is my special teams player of the year.
See, you went for the exciting part of special teams.
I did.
I mean, kick returns are exciting.
They are.
But I went with the kickers.
It's fair. It's another part.
Kickers are people too.
They are. Thomas.
They are people too.
Punters are people too.
Punters are people. Long snappers, they're all people.
They're all people.
They're all people. Kickers. This was a tough one for me because if you do it strictly by a points, it should have been an easy pick with Arkansas State's break group. He was 49 of 50 on PATs, 17 of 20 on field goals, had 100 points. But for me, and I know everyone's going to say, oh, he's biased because it's this guy. But no, I'm going to go Tyler Sumter. He's perfect on PATs, and he was 14 of 18 on field goals.
Your number one job as a kicker is to make the PAT.
Make the PAT.
No one did that better than him.
Tyler Bass was 35 of 35 as well. But
no one did it better.
But no one did it better than him. He had 46 of 46. And Tyler Bass missed 8 field goals on the year. So...
versus 4 missed field goals.
So it was really close between group because group had missed 1 PAT and had only missed 3 field goals when Tyler Sumter missed 4 field goals and missed no PATs.
And honestly, that to me, just like face value, missing 4 field goals versus 1 PAT and 3 field goals, it's a little bit different. I'm sure there's probably a block. That's probably the reason why he missed that one.
Probably.
But, I mean, it's still... Stats don't lie. Numbers don't lie.
Yeah.
Ball don't lie.
I mean, and also the other thing is with him is Sumter's also punting at Arkansas State.
Punters are people too.
Group, all he's doing is kicking. Arkansas State also has a really good punter and Cody Grace. That's why I had to give it to Tyler Sumter. I just thought, and the other thing is I know we're talking singular, but the kid still hasn't missed a PAT in his career and he's about to go into his senior season. So I think there's been one person in the entire Sun Belt history. And that was Mr. Ryan Kay, who's obviously
his predecessor.
His predecessor and also a guest of the show as well. So if he can finish out, obviously, knock on wood, this year, I think Scott Watkins might have jinxed. There was another kid that it's either the group or somebody else that was perfect through their career as well that had missed a PAT this year. And I think Scott Watkins, I think he jinxed him. So I don't want to be that jinx. So, no, he's going to be my special teams player of the year is Mr. Tyler Sumter from Troy University. So with that, let's head to the freshman of the year, which we had some exciting freshmen this year.
We did.
In this conference. For me, I'm going to agree with the Sun Belt. I think he had one of the best freshman years in a long, long time, and especially to be put in the instance that he was or the case that he was coming in basically after 4 games and you're relieving a guy that was going to be probably the best quarterback in the conference this year. I think him and Caleb would have really battled it out in Logan Bonner. But, no, I'm going to go Lane Hatcher. I mean, the kid is what – I know that Troy game. I was like, he's a freshman. They can get on him. Nah, this kid's good, man. We're going to be hearing about this kid for the next 3 years here.
Yeah,
I mean,
and to have that guy as a redshirt freshman and then to have Omar as well as Kirk Merritt, it was –
Now, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how he does when he loses these two wide receivers and Merritt and Bayless. But the kid's still a freak of a nature. I mean, he's a talent. I mean, the other cool thing is in the Sun Belt, back to back freshman of the year. for Arkansas State. Last year, Marcel Murray. This year, Wayne Hatcher.
And you were talking about Marcel Murray at one
point. Yeah, I said Marcel Murray at the beginning of the year. I thought he was going to kind of be the dark horse guy, even though he was freshman of the year last year. He still had a decent year. He was banged up most of the year. He ran for 800 yards.
But when you have the player of the year.
Yeah, I mean, you got to go to him. So, but no, Lane Hatcher, 2,500 yards passing, 23 TDs. This is the best stat. Out of his eight games, five of them, he threw for 300 yards or more. In five of his eight games. I think that's one of the most impressive things as a freshman. He's my freshman of the year, Lane Hatcher, out of our state.
Well, mine's going to be on the other side of the ball, and I'm going to pick one that's a little bit less well-known. I'm going to go with Del Pettis at Troy,
ooh,
freshman All-American. I don't remember what his ranking was, but he was 26th, tied for 26th. In the conference in tackles, he led every freshman in tackles. That's a total of 39 solo tackles, mm-hmm. and then 24 assisted tackles. Let's see, how many sacks did he get here? He didn't get a sack,
yeah.
But he started all 12 games for mm-hmm. Troy, which is impressive for a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
And on this defense, I think that the tail of the tape there is he's good. He's a freshman.
Oh, he's young.
And I think that inexperience is going to be a huge contributing factor.
It's going to pay off.
Reason he'll be good in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also possibly the reason that Troy's defense just didn't show up in a lot of games.
There's a lot of youth on that defense.
There is.
I mean, a lot of injuries, a lot of youth. Hell, even Carlton Marshall's a sophomore. I mean, there's a lot. And there's some injuries. I mean, there's a youth. And I think that he points right to it. Is as a freshman, he's coming in 12 straight games. You're playing offenses that are, I mean, Southern Miss, you're talking about Arkansas State, App State, you know, UL, I mean, Louisiana.
They're just as relentless as Troy's offense was.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and so, that's a good pick on the defensive side of the ball. Second to last one.
We're going to go to breakout player of the year.
Breakout player of the year. Who you got?
I'm going to go with Josh Johnson. We've talked about him a couple times.
Okay.
Yeah, you didn't even recognize who I was going to do. He kept guessing.
I had to keep it quiet.
Yeah. But yeah, Josh Johnson, literally top 10 in rushing at one point in the year in the country.
In the country.
Finished second in rushing yards behind Darrington Evans and number 10th in scoring touchdowns. That's period. That's across the board. That is touchdowns. 10th in scoring touchdowns.
Gotcha.
He did as much as he did more than most players in the rest of the conference. Only 9 others scored more touchdowns than he did.
It's pretty solid
for a guy who's not Caleb Evans.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting the ball a lot. He's scoring a lot.
Oh, he's gonna be toting the rock next year.
Oh, for sure.
For sure.
And you were saying, I think without Caleb Evans, this team wouldn't have been as good. I have to disagree because of Josh Johnson.
Okay.
That's the only reason, because he's that talented of a back. I at one point said he and Darrington Evans were the two best backs in the conference, and I still at this moment believe that.
Yeah, I certainly put him, Trey Barnett. Up there, and Josh Johnson, my guy, my breakout player of the year, another running back.
Why not?
And you know, people are gonna be like, oh, he's jumping on the Troy train. Sorry, DK Billingsley, I thought is the breakout player of the year because no one knew of him. I mean, nobody outside of Troy. Nobody knew who DK Billingsley was. I mean, it was BJ Smith. I mean, BJ Smith was preseason player of the year pick, I'm pretty sure. It was the BJ Smith show. And BJ Smith goes down in the first game, 9 carries in that game, and he's out. I mean, I think he was out before the first half. And you get a guy, a sophomore like DK Billingsley, that goes in there and just picks up. I mean, he was almost a 1,000-yard running back, 900 yards rushing. For Mr. DK Billingsley, 10 touchdowns. And the best thing was he was a receiving threat out of the backfield. He had 211 yards receiving, and I think 20 catches maybe. So, I mean, that's exactly what you want out of a running back, a guy who is still a threat to catch the ball out of the backfield, and that's exactly what he was. I mean, 211 yards out of the backfield for receiving, that's great. I would love to have seen a couple touchdowns out of him, but he couldn't get into the end zone. But still, 10 touchdowns, 900-yard rushing for DK Billingsley. He's my breakout player for the year. I think him and BJ Smith next year are going to be a one hell of a 1-2 punch because BJ's coming back most likely.
And Troy's going to need somebody to replace the running threat of Caleb Barker.
Yeah.
So to have two running backs in that tandem.
That's going to be scary good. I mean, you're going to have to keep both those guys on the field.
Yeah.
I mean, just because you know what BJ brings to you. Granted, yes, he is coming back from an injury, but you know what he's going to bring to the table.
Whoever that starting quarterback is going to have a heck of a weapon, heck of weapons around him.
Do I hand it off to him? Do I hand it off to him?
What do I do? Throw it?
Do I throw it?
Come on.
I mean, so many options. So, but that, oh yeah, we got one more.
We do.
One more.
We do. One more.
Who, we have the Coach of the Year.
The Coach of the Year award. And I'm going to go with Sean Elliott at Georgia State.
Great pick.
Simply because I didn't see them coming back to and ending up in a bowl game this year. I don't think anybody did. Last year was a down year, and I was like, that's where Georgia State belongs. That's where they usually are. And then I guess Sean Elliott heard me. But the man would run through a brick wall anyway. Oh, so yeah. I feel like he inspired this team on his own to beat a blue blood in Tennessee and to win, what was it, seven games?
Mm-hmm.
A seven-game year for a Sun Belt team, including a win over a Power 5 team. That when was the last time you heard about that? It's not like it was a nine-win team. Mm-mm. Like Troy was.
Yeah.
It's a seven-win team with a Power 5 win.
Over an SEC school.
Over an SEC school.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Elliott gets my Coach of the Year simply because... If I had to pin it on anything, it'd be the Tennessee win. But he kept it going throughout the entire year, and now they're going to a bowl game, even if it is Arizona.
You know, we talked about Coach of the Year last year, who we thought it was down between Eli and Billy Napier. Did Billy get it?
Last year?
No, not last year, but last week we were talking about
Coach
of the Year. Did Billy win Sun Belt?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, yeah, Billy Napier did. Ended up getting it. We were talking about it's basically 1A, 1B between the two. I personally thought Eli Drinkwitz would get it just because of how he performed.
You specifically said, I wouldn't be surprised if Napier got it.
Yeah.
And turns out Napier got it.
He got it. So, for me, though, I'm going to go Eli. Just
you can go with the 1B.
Yeah,
1A, 1B.
Basically 1A, 1B. I'm going to go with Eli Drinkwitz just because he's 2-0 against Billy Napier. He beat him twice. Technically three times.
Two times because he wasn't the coach.
So he beat him twice this year. And to beat a team, people don't understand, it's really hard to beat a team a second time. I mean, go ask Cincy. Go ask Memphis. That was a tough game in the American Conference Championship. And they played 7 days later. But this is it's tough to beat a team a second time in the year. And Eli did that. 12-1 record, two Power 5 wins, which has never been done in Sun Belt history in the same season.
There's no surprise that he was swiped up by Missouri.
No, I was a little shocked actually to see him go after one year. I thought at the beginning of the year, if you would have told me, oh, he's only gonna be here for 1 year, I'd have been like, are you crazy? Like, seriously? After trying to follow up
Satterfield.
Trying to follow up Scott Satterfield. Like, it just I would have not ever said, yeah, 1 year and done. Like, no way. But no, to get two Power 5 wins, Sun Belt Championship. The only knock against him, and it's not really his fault, still hasn't won a bowl game as a head coach because he's not going to play in one because, like you just said, yeah, he's going to Missouri.
That's a great stat.
Yeah, he's 0-0. He's winless in a bowl game as a head coach. So,
as a head coach.
So there you go, Missouri. I don't know if you want to judge him off of that. You know, don't worry about the other 13 games he played this year. He didn't play a bowl game. Just the wins over South Carolina and North Carolina, huge wins. Just the fact of Scott Satterfield took his entire staff. He comes in with his staff and just kind of fills it. And they still go and do what they did. 12 wins is just, I mean, that's the best season ever by a Sun Belt school. And good on for him. I mean, it's a business, ladies and gentlemen. 12-1, sorry, two Power 5 wins, you're not going to beat that season.
Nope.
Like, you can't go up from there.
Well.
Okay, maybe winning 13 games, but then you're still... Sorry, I still think if they go undefeated this year, I still don't think they make it to the Cotton Bowl, even if they're undefeated. Just because of how well the American, how good a conference that was, I think it would have been really, really hard for them to put App State in there. I
think an undefeated season is enough.
It'd be
just
close.
Because that one blemish, the one blemish was enough to pull them down beneath Boise State, Memphis, and Cincinnati.
Who all had one loss.
Who all had one loss.
Yeah.
So if all these teams have if all these teams have one loss and you got undefeated,
but since he had two losses and was still ahead of them, that's my only thing is just on a national scale, and we've talked about this all year long, is the respect that the Sun Belt gets. on a national scale from all of the AP voters, the College Football Playoff Committee. I don't think that the Sun Belt has garnered that respect yet in a national scene. And it would have been really close. Obviously, 13-0, you hope that gets you in an NY6 Bowl. But for him, there's so much. You got to go. Like 12-1, you got to shop yourself around too. I think he did. I think he shopped himself around. I mean, you can't just let a season like that go by the wayside and not take advantage of it. And now he's making $4 million a year. I think he took advantage of it.
Well, let's go ahead and get into that stuff now with Around the Belt.
Around the Belt.
It's Around the Belt. We're just going to continue on that. Obviously, Eli Drinkwitz headed to Missouri. That came official earlier on in this week. Missouri looking for a coach after getting rid of Barry Odom. To be honest with you, I was shocked they kind of came down into the Sun Belt. I really didn't see a Sun Belt coach. The only guy that I really saw was maybe Billy Napier. His name kind of floated around early when they were like 7-2. You kind of started hearing about him. He's got a really good coaching tree off of Nick Saban. People like that. But I didn't think Eli would be a one and done guy. Like we don't. When's the last time we really saw a one and done coach?
Arkansas State.
There you go.
And speaking of which,
where's he at?
Well, Blake Anderson's still at Arkansas State.
Yeah.
But his name was floated around for the Missouri job too. Yeah. He said he would have been, obviously anybody would have been open to it, but he said he would have been open to it. They just never contacted him. Never got in touch.
Well, Arkansas State went through like three coaches in like 4 years.
Exactly.
Right?
Gus Malzahn, Brian Hansen.
Yeah, all of them are Harsin, whatever.
Harsin, you're right.
So yeah, they've used to that kind of spinning door of coaches.
And honestly, I think if you're a Sun Belt team, the best kind of coach to have is that Blake Anderson, who's number one. Mm-hmm. He's a great guy. Number two, he has got a great culture. Mm-hmm. And number three, he wins at a decent pace. He wins 7, 8, 9 games a year, gets you to a bowl game, wins you a bowl game every so often. And he'll never leave because he's not quote-unquote good enough for these other teams to snipe up.
Which is, I mean, okay, yeah, you get a 12-1 season and your coach is gone. I guess this is the question. Would you take a 12-1 season and your coach leaving, or would you take 8 wins every year and go to a bowl game and keep your coach?
And
I'd rather have the 8 wins every year and go to a bowl game.
Larry Blakeney was like that at the beginning.
Yeah, for five years.
Blake Anderson's like that now.
Yeah.
Once it starts to get sour, I mean, obviously we saw that with Blakeney.
Yeah.
But Blake Anderson, knock on wood, hasn't done that yet.
Maybe the threshold is win 10 wins. Get 10 wins in a Sun Belt season and you're gone. You think about Neil, gone. Satterfield, won 10 games.
Okay, well then let's test that theory, and we've got Napier. Napier's got 10 wins. They got 10 wins.
Yeah.
So if Napier is still here in January, I will. That theory is bunk.
Yeah.
But we'll keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're doing.
Because I mean, his name's out there still, and I fully expect there's gonna be more jobs that open up here. We have a lot of bowls to play.
Carousel has only begun.
Yeah. I think there's a lot. Let's talk about some of the ones that got filled. We talked about Lane Train. Headed to Ole Miss. Just Lane Kiffin is a man of himself. By himself. I mean, the polarization that this guy brings. Think about this. He failed upwards.
He really did.
He sucked at Oakland.
Yep.
He sucked at USC.
Yep.
He sucked at Tennessee.
Yep.
Then he kind of failed down.
Yep.
Then he went to Alabama as an offensive coordinator.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't really great. Just was put on an offense that, I mean, had Jalen Hurts on it, I'm pretty sure. Then got the job at FAU, signed a 10-year deal at FAU, mind you. Everybody remember that? Signed a 10-year deal. We're like, we got a coach for 10 years. Everybody's like, a little quick. And obviously now he goes to Ole Miss. And I don't know if I would consider this a suck like and go upward. Because Ole Miss right now with all of the – Ole Miss has got – they're a brand right now, a good brand that – you saw the reaction of just their fans. Yes. The problem is you're on probation. Like, you've been on probation for the last, 2 years. And they're really, they aren't as bad as Arkansas. I will say that. But that's a tough program. You're in the West. You're expected to compete against Nick Saban. LSU.
Ed Orgeron.
Now LSU's rolling.
Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah, and A&M. I mean,
Gus Malzahn.
I mean, you're expected to compete with all that? That's and you're kind of doing it in his first year, basically with that arm tied behind his back, basically in this first year. And it's now his first thought right now, I just got to keep my recruiting class together. That's basically because they had a decent recruiting class. He's already lost a couple of decommits, basically. So it's going to be tough for him. And it's back in the SEC. It's not Conference USA. I mean, it's not. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how Lane does. I think leash right now is pretty long. I think it's a 2 to 3 year. All right, let's see what he can do. But if you're in the SEC, you're going to be expected to win 8-9 games a year. And if you don't do that, I mean, that's what happened to Matt Luke. I mean, Matt Luke was a great coach. He's already been swiped up by Georgia.
Yeah.
Kirby went in and snagged him up.
Let's follow that around real quick.
Okay.
We've got Lane Kiffin, the Florida Atlantic head coach to Ole Miss, mm-hmm. became the head coach. Matt Luke, the Ole Miss head coach, became the Georgia offensive line coach. Mm-hmm. The Georgia offensive line coach went to Arkansas to become their head coach. Mm-hmm. Arkansas's head coach, Chad Morris, went to Auburn to become the offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Auburn's offensive coordinator, Kenny Dillingham, is now at FSU as their offensive coordinator. And FSU's head coach, Willie Taggart, is now at Florida Atlantic.
And that leads us into Willie Taggart going to Florida Atlantic.
Completing the circle.
Completing the massive circle of coaches. Insane. Literally insane. Willie Taggart, you know, everybody that I've talked to or like that I know, I personally know two guys that played for Willie Taggart when he was at Western Kentucky. And Willie Taggart, I think, was in a bad situation at Florida State. Like he did well at Western Kentucky. Then he went to South Florida, did well there, had some good, I think he had a couple of 9-win seasons. Then he went to Oregon for like a year, maybe two, and just didn't really pan out. I really think he was one of the coaches that kind of got in over his head. He's a really good coach. He's a player's coach. Like, players love him. Like, the players still loved him at Florida State. They didn't produce. And at Florida State, that's one of those programs where you can't be not in the top 25. If you are not in the top 25 at the end of the year, you're going to be on the hot seat no matter what. I mean, that's just, hell, if you're not in the top 15 by the end of the year, because your recruiting classes that you're bringing in are constantly top 10 recruiting classes, and if you can't perform with that, the alumni, you aren't going to have the crowd. And it's unfortunate to him because he really was a good coach, I think. And I think he's going to keep FAU at one of the better Group of Five teams. I don't think FAU goes down with him. I think that's where he really needs to be. So, finally,
go ahead.
Mr. Mike Norvell, who ended up going to Florida State, the new head coach.
Filling that gap
as well. I have no idea who Memphis even hired. I think they're still in the search.
I think they're still in the search, yeah.
Memphis isn't an attractive job. I like Memphis. They're obviously in the American. American conference teams have proven that they can go out and they have the money and the backing to get good coaches. I mean, you look at Houston. They have, I mean, just the payouts. Like, we talked about the payouts of coaches in the American. They've got like four coaches in the top 40, like, that are paid just as much as Power Five coaches. And so that's the great thing. And that's why I think Memphis is such an attractive position. One, because you're in the South, there's plenty of recruiting trails all around Memphis. And then you've got a school that's willing to put out some, you know, moolah to bring in a decent name coach. So Mike Norvell, obviously, I don't know if you saw the game, but he was asked like three times in the interview, and he's like, man, I just want to celebrate, man. Like, like everybody knew. I mean, and it sucks for a coach. I mean, yeah. Coach doesn't want to talk about that. Like, he was there for what, 3 years? I think 3 years, three, maybe four, at Memphis. Recruited kids like this. We saw it with Neil. I mean, there's a connection that these coaches make. And, you know, he did not want to talk about Florida State. Everybody knew that he was going there. I think he's a great hire for Florida State.
Oh, for sure.
I don't know. I kept reading all throughout like the 48 or 72 hours of when all of it was going down. They're like, oh, there's question marks on Novell. I've never really heard anything bad about him. Like, I don't know what the hangup was about him. And he has explosive offenses. He obviously recruits well. He's from down here, I'm pretty sure. So I didn't see what the hangup was for the Florida State people. Of, oh, we don't want Mike Norvell. Like, I guess they all thought they were getting Bob Stoops. So I guess nothing lives up to Bob Stoops. Sorry, Bob Stoops is not coming back to college football.
No.
Like, he didn't like it to begin with. He didn't like the NCAA. He doesn't like all the rules. He doesn't want to come back to college football. He's about to go coach in the XFL, which is no rules, basically. So I'm pretty sure he's going to stick with that. So, but yeah, that's the four big hires, I think. Colorado State hired somebody today.
Steve Adazio
out of Boston College. Yep. So Boston College has opened up. I mean, there's a carousel is in full effect right now. And
honestly, if there's any coach from the Sun Belt who is a likely prospect, I think it's Billy Napier. Mm-hmm. Blake Anderson's a very close second. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I don't see any other schools in the Sun Belt losing their coach.
No, I don't think Sean Elliott goes anywhere this year. Chip, I think, is going to be here next year for Troy.
Yeah. He hasn't done anything yet.
Hasn't gotten to a bowl game. I think he thought that he was going to have the year that Eli Drinkwitz had. I think he was not necessarily 12 wins, but I think he saw maybe 9, 10 wins, and that would have had him been able to sniff some coaching jobs. But 5-7, nah, that's not going to get you coaching jobs. So, that's going to do it for the coaching changes around the belt. And I guess
we've been focusing more on the around portion of the around the belt with the carousel.
I mean, it's great G5. We kept it G5.
But here's we'll focus more on the belt portion of it now.
Talk to me about we've got to recognize somebody, right?
Absolutely. Our first, I
think it was our first ever.
Ben on Sports Hustle
My
Award winner. Karen Chisholm, 40 years, over 900 wins, retired this past week. Mm-hmm. The head coach of the Texas State women's volleyball team went out with a bang, winning the Sun Belt Conference. I don't know how many times we give up count. It ought to be her trophy by the end of the day.
Yeah, it should be the Karen Chisholm Sun Belt Championship.
Pretty much. Yeah. And they lost in the first round of the playoffs. Yeah. But, I mean, hats off to Chisholm, Coach Chisholm, for a remarkable, incredible career.
Incredible. 900 wins is...
Anytime anyone makes that plateau, it's beyond amazing. And for one person, more than 40 years in San Marcos... she deserves a statue.
It was her entire coaching career, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. At Texas State. I mean, 900 wins in any sport is incredible. I mean, there's some pretty, there's some pretty well-known names that are probably on that 900 win list of at all sports. Mike Krzyzewski, Pat Summitt, Gino Auriemma. I mean, those are the names that kind of come to mind when you hear over 900 wins in a specific sport. And you could probably name them on two hands, if that, at this point. I mean, it's just incredible amount of wins. And congrats to her. Congrats to the Texas State volleyball family, just the athletic family. Because that lady, I mean, she's obviously she's probably already in their Hall of Fame at this point. Incredible, incredible career for Coach Chisholm.
Chisholm. It's Chisholm.
Yeah, Chisholm.
It's Chisholm. Chisholm.
We're probably sort of not pronouncing that right.
It might be wrong.
Who knows? So, but respect to her. A lot of respect. So, let's move on to some basketball here. You got some men's basketball.
Yeah.
Right now.
So, I mean, nothing's really changed. Arkansas State's still on top, but I think it's worth noting they beat Tulsa earlier this week, 66-63. I was looking at this, and I was about to say, you know, that might be the win of the year so far. For a team to be 7-2 with a win over another major G5 team, an American team, that's pretty impressive. You pointed out a better one to me. So right now, I think the win of the year is Coastal, who's 6-4 and sitting in fourth. They beat Utah 79-57. Utah, Pac-12 team, beat them by 16 points. No, 22 points. I can't do math. They beat them by 22 points. Right now, that's a pretty solid win. The win of the year right there. Also worth mentioning, they beat Middle Tennessee by 21 points. But here's the deal. They lost to Campbell Camels, 75-74, and Northern Kentucky, again, by 1 point, 69-68. So this Coastal Carolina team, if they had not lost two teams that are definitely not major basketball teams, they would be 8-2 right now on top with the two of the biggest wins of the year. I think it's worth circling them and keeping an eye on them because they're not great, but they can make a lot of noise if you're not paying attention. Georgia State is 6-3. They're on a 5-game win streak. That's the biggest win streak in the whole conference right now. Georgia Southern's at number 2, also 6-3. Before I move on, Troy is in last. Troy is in the position, but They have a 2-game win streak. They're 3-6.
Watch out.
And they got a 2-game win streak.
Watch out. They're getting hot. I think they got wins over. They have one win over a Division I school at this point in this
and
year. And that was North Alabama.
Exactly right. Troy is at this point the equivalent of a growling chihuahua. I mean, that team, it's. I really think Scott Cross is going to turn this program around.
He is. They're,
right I mean, now. Oof. You got a lot of work ahead of him.
A lot of work to do. Well, that's a men's wrap up, right?
Yeah, it's right. That's
the
men.
I got the women's. Sort of good. We've had some good showings, I think. Not the only the big win throughout the entire conference. UTA over Kansas State had a 57-53 win over Kansas State. Good win there. Big 12 team. Big 12 women's basketball is pretty solid. And we talked about them last week. I'm just going to jump off on UTA. I've got a couple other teams to talk about. But no, UTA, we talked about them last week that they probably have the toughest 4-game stretch I've ever seen a Sun Belt school have. They went to Kansas State, beat them. So they start out 1-0 on this stretch. It was a great start. Then they go and they play Louisville, who I think is like a top 10 team. Lost to them by 9. Then they played Oregon, which was at the time the number one team in the country. Lost to them by 37. So that was kind of a roll. And then they played Oklahoma State and lost to them by 13. So, yes, 3 losses, but that's a very, very, very tough stretch. And to get 1 win out of that, that's good. I think that was great. And they're sitting at 5-3, so they've won all their games. But the only 3 losses they have are to Oregon, Louisville, and Oklahoma State. Pac-12, ACC, Big 12. Not bad.
No.
I think UTA, toughest tested team in the conference at this point.
For sure.
At this point.
And, I mean, their basketball programs are always so good.
Oh, yeah.
But
that's just an insane stretch. I'm still baffled by that stretch. Like, the coach is like, all right, guys, we're going to get through this. Like, we're just going to get through it. Like, that's all we got to do. So,
and honestly, I can't blame them, because if you stand them up next to any other team, we talked about quality losses earlier.
Yeah.
I made a joke about it.
Those.
If anybody's got a quality loss, it's UTA women's basketball.
Yeah, I would say they're 1. And I think we have a 2A and a 2B for that. I think South Alabama is 2A. South played Rutgers, UAB, and Alabama.
Was their record in those games?
0-3.
Well.
But they weren't as competitive. 21-point loss to Rutgers, 18-point loss to UAB, and a 12-point loss to Alabama. So I think that's 2A. 2B, Troy. The reason why is Troy, they've lost to Mississippi State, which obviously top 10 national perennial program. They've been in the Sweet 16 the last 3 years. And they lost to Duke, both on the road. They got to play in Cameron in like indoor stadium. That's like goals right there. If you get to play in Cameron indoor, like, man, like, that's incredible. The thing that with Troy is, yes, they played Mississippi State and gave up 122 points, which is wild. But they scored 82. And then they played Duke. They gave up 99 points, but they scored 85. They scored over 80 points against 2 really good basketball programs. That's a lot of offense. And then since then, they've really shut down the defense. They've had 3 games since then. They're on a 3-game winning streak, and they haven't allowed anybody to score over 70 points in the 3-game winning streak. They sit at 6-3. The leader of the entire conference, though, is Coastal Carolina.
Yeah.
7-1. Coastal has not been challenged, though. They're kind of like, I know South Alabama last year, they jumped out to like a 12-0 record, but
13, yeah.
They really weren't challenged in their first. Coastal's kind of got the same type of schedule. It's really soft.
But South Alabama made it pretty far in the finals.
They did make it. They made it in IT, so we'll see what happens. I mean, you go win your first 13 games, you set yourself up for the second half. I mean, you've got a huge, huge like leeway of, okay, we can have a 3-game losing streak here and we can still be 10 games over 500. So,
yeah.
No, Coastal leads right now 7-1. Louisiana 6-2. They're kind of another kind of soft schedule. Troy 6-3, UTA 5-3, and South Alabama 4-5. Everybody else has got a losing record after that. So, but no, those are the 3 teams I think that have been tested the most in this early on to see, and just the response. I think UTA is going to be a really tough team this year. And I think Troy, just how well Troy's going to be a really solid team. And the other thing with Troy is their RPI is 28th in the country, or no, 33rd in the country right now, which is tops in the Sun Belt. I don't know how their RPI is higher than UTA's RPI, because UTA has played an incredible schedule as well. UTA must be really close. So, but no, that'll wrap it up for the women's basketball. Obviously, very early on, we will get to that. We've got bowl season coming up, so we'll obviously have our bowl season next week.
Pick those next week.
Bowl season preview next week.
We got that Army-Navy game to decide this weekend.
We do. So I'm spending a lot of money on Christmas presents. I don't know about you. I spent way too much money last night on Christmas presents. But we're getting closer to Christmas. We're getting closer to bowl games. So we'll have you that, all of that previews, all of those previews. We got five teams, bowl games.
Yeah.
Everybody went
all
to
all five.
All five teams went to bowl games, which is really good. Any surprises in who went where? I think Georgia Southern was a surprise.
To me, I've made this comment before. I kind of expected Blake Anderson.
We all expected Arc State to go to Cure Bowl.
Yeah.
Cure Bowl.
But yeah. I don't know. I don't know what happened behind the scenes. It's entirely possible that the Mobile Bowl. The Camellia Bowl got to him first.
Maybe he, because I know, I remember, maybe he kind of didn't want to be in that limelight.
It's entirely possible that too.
I think that would have been a lot for him.
You're right.
Because they do so much. And you know, throughout the year, I know Georgia did the big pink out.
Right.
And kind of since then,
would have given him an opportunity to just focus on football.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's the way it was explained to me by someone. But, I mean, it was a surprise to me. Yeah. But in hindsight, it shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
I don't think Georgia State going to the Arizona Bowl surprised anybody. Louisiana coming to Mobile didn't surprise anybody. Mm-mm. It's just the two in the middle that kind of got flopped.
Yeah.
It was a little bit.
So we will have those previews next week, and we're going to break it down. We've got, I think all of them are really solid matchups for the Sun Belt. I think early on looking, four out of the five, I think Sun Belt is
We'll talk about that next week.
And we will talk about that next week. So thank you again for tuning in. You can follow us on social media, right?
Yeah.
Twitter.
At the OG Bench Boys.
At the OG Bench Boys. You can follow me at ColinKale13. You can follow him at Thomas Gleeton at Thomas Gleeton on Twitter. Obviously, hit the subscribe button while you're here on any platform. We're glad you guys are here. We're glad you guys have been along the ride so far for this athletic season. And man, what a great football season it's been. What do we get? Four Power Five wins. Great season for Sun Belt.
Yeah.
And hopefully they can put an exclamation mark on this season with a bunch of good bowl wins next week. So with that, you got anything else to say?
I ain't got nothing else.
All I got to say is, come on back.